cousin with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Past the hour, and difficult to believe though it is, we find ourselves having reached Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. And yeah, Thorn in the Side Thursday. Let me say that just a program note, a reminder: I will not be here Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of next week. I'll be on the road in Washington, D.C. trying as best I can to talk, to walk the walk, in addition to talking the talk about the urgent necessity of ending mountaintop removal here in Appalachia. Three others are going, and we are going. We will do what we do every time we go. We will work various and sundry offices, and we will go at it until generally what happens is the minute your head hits the pillow, you're asleep. You walk the halls of Congress till your feet stop feeling like feet and start feeling more like tender little meat balloons at the end of your leg. We'll do that. We'll do that because it's worthwhile. We will do that. Well, you know the reasons, don't you? You know the hell and damnation that is unleashed every day all across the central Appalachian so-called coal fields, so that CEOs of coal companies can make gargantuan multi-million dollar bonus profits, literally sodden with the blood of innocence. You know that. So that's where I'm going to be next week. And that means I won't be here to fundraise and pitch, but there's some good news coming out of a couple of nights broadcasting. You know, Monday night I said that if we took care of some business, I'd shut up about fundraising on Tuesday, and we did, and I was able to. And I said not a word about it on Tuesday. Last night we had a generous challenge from Robert in Australia. Monday was a challenge from Jason. Both were met, and in addition, an in memoriam gift came along last night. A very kind and generous gift in memory of a recently departed father. A gift in memory of Harry, gone at the age of 82, but far, far from being forgotten. So, thanks, Harry. It would have been an honor and a pleasure to have known you. So as it stands, we are only about $600 from reaching our fundraising goal for the month of February. I'm sorry it always seems to come down to the wire, but I guess that's what we can expect. You know, we don't have any multi-million dollar corporate sponsors or anything. The way this happens is it happens because you, with grit and determination, continue to insist that this continue to exist. And for that, we are all forever grateful. So what we need between now and next Wednesday, and I won't be here Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, are 60 members of the Thrifty 250. 60 members of the Thrifty 250, 60 people at $10 apiece to get us to where we need to be to end the month of February. So that's where it stands, and that's about as much as I'm going to say about it tonight. But your kindness is always appreciated, much remembered, and much considered. I'm going to hate being away from the microphone next week, and the next few weeks are going to have some absences built into them that are unavoidable. There are things that just have to be done as spring winter begins to thaw and spring begins to come. It is a call not just to the renewal of life in this particular hemisphere, but it's a call to the renewal of our activities, our energies, and our efforts. And we will be dealing with that. And understand that we're dealing with that on a shoestring, too. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday. And I'll start out with one of my very own thorns. I got up this morning, and I had and I get a lot of them, you know, Habitat for Humanity, Union of Concerned Scientists, you know, good organizations all. And I got up today. I've been at it since about 5 o'clock this morning. If you suddenly hear one of those, that's just because I've fallen asleep and my head's banged against the microphone. It's just the way life is running these days. But I got up this morning and started reading my email, and even after the first couple of cups of decaf, sometimes I can still be a little bit cranky. And this one flipped my cranky switch. The subject line in the email was, "Wolves can't ask for help, but it doesn't mean they don't need it." Now, before anybody gets the wrong impression, I'm all for saving wolves. It was gut-bendingly disgusting to me, the way that Godzilla from Wasilla, Caribou Barbie, Mussolini, Sarah Palin, celebrated over the fact that she flew over wolves in a helicopter or whatever other animal she was into slaughtering that day and blew them away from the air like some sort of... well, never mind. It's disgusting. So, yes, I'm sensitive, and the wolves are beautiful animals who deserve, you know, to be left the hell alone. Well, it turns out that two wolves left their pack in Oregon. One wolf, OR7, traveled south to California, protected under the Endangered Species Act. His brother, OR9, traveled east to Idaho, where he was no longer protected. You know, Idaho. OR9 was killed by a hunter with an expired license on February the 2nd. Photos show the Idaho hunter proudly lifting the limp, dead body of OR9 by the bloody scruff of his radio-collared neck. The hunter who did the deed illegally received a stern warning. Or a Laurel and Hardy handshake. I don't know. And so, yeah, that's a little tough to see in the morning. But it got a little bit ruder for me. Wolves can't ask for help, but it doesn't mean they don't need it. So what this was a solicitation pitch from the Sierra Club. Now, I realize a lot of you have warm and fuzzy feelings about the Sierra Club. I try to, too. But this morning, knowing some of the things that I'm involved in and that we're working on these days, for instance, the peer-reviewed scientific evidence that suggests, for instance, that mountaintop removal is causing babies to be deformed in the womb, you know, that kind of thing, it didn't sit too well with me. Because you see, the Sierra Club is sitting on $50 million that they took from one of the most prominent one percenters on the planet, to wit, New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg. He gave them $50 million for something called a Beyond Coal campaign. And the goal of the Beyond Coal campaign is to end coal-fired electricity sometime soon, you know, 40, 50 years from now. Sooner if possible. The only problem with the Beyond Coal campaign being that if you eliminate every coal-fired power plant in the United States, they're still going to blow up my home and the homes of my friends and my colleagues. And they're going to poison babies in the womb, these coal companies. And they're going to continue to cause pulmonary disorders and heart disease and premature death and cancers and failures of various and sundry bodily organs, because that coal is still valuable for export purposes, and export it we do. Literally, by the boatload. The Beyond Coal campaign wouldn't have a dime's worth of difference on the mountain being blown up just a few miles from where I now sit, because all of that coal is going to get on a boat and go to India. And it wouldn't have any impact on other mines in this state where the coal's going to get on a boat and go to Russia. And it wouldn't have any impact on the coal that is getting on a boat that's been blasted out of the ground by Alpha Natural Resources, formerly Massey Energy, who you might remember almost 2 years ago now slaughtered 29 men in their tracks at the Upper Big Branch mine simply because, well, Don Blankenship's motto was, "Work like you mean it. We're here to move coal, not work on safety issues." Yeah. So the Beyond Coal campaign does not have a damn thing to do with ending the plight and the suffering of hillbillies. But you know what? I have yet to see an email go out from the Sierra Club that says, "Hillbillies can't ask for help, but it doesn't mean they don't need it." That is a very, very soulful face on that gray wolf. I guess it's more soulful than the grizzled visage of a hillbilly woman or a hillbilly man who eke out an existence every day of their life underneath some godforsaken sacrifice zone. I guess. But that was my first thorn in the side this Thursday, was being reminded that hillbillies are less important to the Sierra Club than are wolves. That's where it is. Because, you see, this is a national campaign. This was a national campaign, and an email that went out on it today. To save wolves. A national campaign to save wolves. And yet, the Sierra Club does not have a national campaign to end the suffering of Appalachian people. National campaign to save wolves, no national campaign to save human beings. Maybe you get a little better idea now why I so vociferously state that I am a human rights activist. It's not that I don't care about the wolves. I really love the wolves. Wolves are beautiful. And to hear the howl of one is both exquisite and chilling at the same time. But to watch a deformed baby struggle for life, and to know that those deformations were brought about by the greed of the coal industry, there is no exhilaration. There is no fear. There is only endless sadness and grief. But the wolves get a national campaign and a national email ask. Not so much the hillbillies. Because you see, and I've been kind of sitting on this for a while, because it's awfully darned bothersome, and it's past bothersome. It's depressing. You see, the Sierra Club is in bed with Bank of America. Bank of America is one of, if not the, leading funders of mountaintop removal. It's incontrovertible. They love mountaintop removal. It makes them money. It makes them money from the blood of suffering children. It makes them money from the dying hearts and failing lungs of Appalachian people. It is almost pure, unmitigated evil. The Earth First Newswire reporting a story that I've really, really tried, and I don't like to admit this, that I've really, really tried not to deal with. But we just have to. Big Greenwashing 101, or How Sierra Club Learned to Stop Worrying About the 99% and Love Wall Street. EarthFirstNews.wordpress.com. EarthFirstNews.wordpress.com. From 2007 to 2010, the Sierra Club took over $25 million in anonymous donations from the natural gas industry. You know, the frackers. That is back when Carl Pope was leading the Sierra Club. Michael Brune leads it now. He came there from Rainforest Action Network, a very, very activist-oriented group. But now Sierra Club is in bed with the 1% in the form of Michael Bloomberg. And the Sierra Club has what it calls an affinity scheme with Bank of America. They offer a credit card, a green branded credit card through Bank of America. With every purchase, a donation is made to a good cause, a small profit for Bank of America, and a public image coup for a bank, as the report notes, under fire from everything to foreclosures to mountaintop removal to massive employee layoffs. The Sierra Club is actively involved in an affinity scheme, a credit card scheme, with Bank of America, as is Credo Mobile Working Assets, Defenders of Wildlife, the Nature Conservancy, Natural Wildlife Foundation, and the Wilderness Society. Just so you'll know who they're doing business with, this again according to this report, Rainforest Action Network says that Bank of America has the biggest portfolio of coal projects that harm public health and destroy the climate. In 2009-2010, the coal industry received $3.9 billion with a B dollars in underwriting and corporate loans from Bank of America. It's involved in every step of the coal cycle. It regularly underwrites billions to the industry, including hundreds of millions of dollars in loans to Arch Coal and Peabody Energy, the two biggest coal mining companies in the country. They also underwrite billions every year to coal-heavy utility corporations like Southern Company and Edison International. And in addition, of course, they are the single largest forecloser of homes in the U.S. and have laid off tens of thousands of employees in recent years. as Earth First News notes, Sierra Club's tough talk on the coal industry and growing anti-corporate rhetoric, coupled with their affinity for Bank of America, stinks of rank hypocrisy. The report continues, mistakenly, many see organizations like the Sierra Club as the left flank of the environmental movement, but their collusion with Wall Street and the extraction industry dispels that myth. While the grassroots environmental and climate movements increasingly rise up against the 1%, the environmental nonprofit complex follows the direction of corporate donors. Climate-impacted communities have long viewed big green groups as another buffer between corporations and the front lines. And bear in mind, this is just the damn truth. I'm sorry. They have fundraised like wild on the backs of dancing hillbillies. You better believe they have. Yet nonetheless, this morning I opened my mail to find out that the Sierra Club wanted no gift under $15 accepted. Wanted me to send money to save a wolf. To save a wolf. When they can't be bothered to help save my grandchildren. And when I say help save my grandchildren, I'm not, that's no exaggeration. Not at all. You know, the Obama administration did announce some mercury and air toxic standards in the recent past. Those standards would save something like 11,000 lives per year. Those would be directly prevented deaths. The new rule, among other things, would prevent 130,000 childhood asthma attacks. Those sound like good things, don't they? To those of us who drink water and breathe air, they are. But understand that with the announcement of that rule, the battle has already been joined. Senator James Inhofe of Oklahoma has decided to go to war with my grandchildren. And my grandchildren are in no position to fight back. Golly, the oldest one's not quite 5 yet. The youngest one is working on being 2. So they really don't have much of a chance against a millionaire 1% member of the United States Senate, now do they? But he has. Senator Inhofe has gone to war with my grandchildren and every child in the United States of America. He has filed something called a Congressional Review Act. And that act has the possibility of killing the new mercury and air toxic standards. But as an added bonus, it also has the likelihood of making it impossible for the Environmental Protection Agency to ever attempt to make sure that little children are able to breathe. Ever! Ever. James Inhofe wants those 11,000 American citizens dead. James Inhofe wants those horrifying moments that accompany 130,000 childhood asthma attacks. He wants those. He yearns for those. He aches for those. He desires those. He lusts for those. Because the polluting profiteers who own James Inhofe desire them, ache for them, yearn for them, lust for them. Because 130,000 American children breathing well, because 11,000 more Americans continuing to be 11,000 alive Americans, and therefore not not eligible for posthumous Mormon baptism, I guess, they're standing in the way of more profit for the 1%. So, yeah, I get a little frustrated when I see that an organization is more worked up about a wolf than it is a human baby. And I share Jim's sentiments. My condolences for the poor wolf and a pox on the hunter. Agreed in both instances. No, don't worry, Kim. She says, "Phew, I'm so glad I didn't forward you the petition to save the Russian cats from being tattooed. Vanity tattooing, I believe it's called. But I thought that same thing. What the F about tatting a cat when people are dying?" Well, you see, it's the great nonprofit donation hustle. I don't even like saying phrases like that, but some people, you send out a wolf appeal because there's lots of Americans that if you sent out a picture of Bob's little grandchildren and said, "Let's not kill them," wouldn't send $15, but if you send out a picture of a fuzzy wuzzy little wolfie, they will. Gags my gut. But some things matter to people, some people more than others. And it should come as no surprise to me that little hillbilly children don't matter much in the grand scheme of what gets people all misty-eyed in other places in this country. But I'm damned if I'll go to bat for somebody that won't go to bat for me. I will not carry water for someone who has no interest in my ability to even drink it, or whether it's clean enough for me to wash in it, or more importantly, wash, bathe my little ones. Agnes does all the bathing anyway. I haven't had a bath since the Hoover administration. The Sierra Club has done some supportive work. They have funded some very good litigation in this region. But they have no interest whatsoever in a serious campaign whose sole focus is ending the torment of Appalachia. Because you know what? It's really good for fundraising. Very effective. You know, there's a possibility that if mountaintop removal ended tomorrow, I might walk away from the microphone. I might be so overcome with joy that I'd just go and... George Washington said something about sitting under his vine and sitting under his fig tree and tending his vines. That might be me. It's probably unlikely. But I don't worry about what happens after mountaintop removal ends. I worry about how we end mountaintop removal. But if you're a big multi-million-dollar so-called big green, you have to wonder about how you're going to do your next fundraising thing if somebody, God forbid, actually made the torment of Appalachia end. And therein, I suppose, lies the difference. It is painful to me to say things like this, because this task is hard enough as it is. And it is being made more so by the Sierra Club's disinterest in having a national campaign to end mountaintop removal, to end the Appalachian apocalypse, to end the agony of the Alleghenies. And all I can do when I turn on the microphone here every evening is be as straightforward and as candid with you as I know how to be. And I'm not going to sugarcoat anything, because this is not entertainment. This is not funnin'. This is not shtick. When I talk about what happens here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by God, Virginia, I'm talking about existentialism at its very most basic. So that's my thorn in the side for this Thursday, but God knows there are more. There's a lot more. Like what? Well, like this. Do you remember a few months back when we talked about the mother who was charged with stealing education? Up in Connecticut? I'm sure you do. She registered her little black son in the wrong school district and stole education for him. She was charged with a felony. Well, that case is over now. Yeah? This wouldn't be on Thorn in the Side Thursday if I was able to report that the justice system had come to its senses and dismissed the case and that moved. No. Mama is going to prison. She has entered a guilty plea. In addition to being charged with stealing education, she's also been convicted of 4 counts of drug possession and sale. She pled guilty to them yesterday. As a result of her guilty plea and her conviction, she owes the city of Norwalk, Connecticut, $6,200 for all that education she stole for her little baby boy. She was a homeless woman trying to survive and trying to do something remotely decent to give her little son, who was already behind the eight ball as it was, something resembling a half of a chance. Authorities allege she enrolled her son in kindergarten in Norwalk using a babysitter's address when he should have attended Bridgeport schools, where her last permanent address was. The sentence was 12 years. But the court, in its wisdom, exercised mercy, for we all know that the quality of mercy is not strained. It falleth as the gentle rain from heaven upon the just and the unjust. Right? And so the judge suspended 7 years of the sentence so that Ms. McDowell, Tanya McDowell, can be out of prison. Hard time. After she has served 5 years. By that time, her little boy will be 11, standing on the threshold of puberty. And he will have become the beginnings of a young man who spent some of the most important formative years of his life without his mother. He's a little guy, Ms. McDowell's son. Ms. McDowell's lawyer is Darnell Crosland. Lawyer Crosland says the little boy thinks his mother stole the school. Because he sure doesn't get to go to school there anymore. When that kind of thing happens in the mind of a 5 or 6-year-old, out of sight is out of mind. Maybe he'd get to go back to the nice school if only Mommy would give the school back. Mommy stole the school. Lawyer Crosland said, that's the sad part. He's with his grandmother, and she's doing the best to raise him. I think you should measure, speaking of his client, Tanya McDowell, I think you should measure her not by the fact that she was arrested for selling drugs, but by what she has done for her child. No one is in prison for the destruction of an entire economy. No one is in prison for the fleecing of the middle class. Tanya McDowell will bear the scorn and the weight of our sins, I suppose, by going to prison for 5 years because she trafficked in illegal substances and tried to get her son a better kindergarten education. My goodness gracious, God bless America, huh? Doesn't it make you just feel so darn good? Andy writing in, blood money. It's blood money. The great plutocrat mayor Michael Bloomberg only gives money when he gets something in return. He's a businessman. It's all about business. This is blood money. Backsheesh. A quid pro quo was extracted. I'd bet on it. Mr. Bloomberg is a cowardly, a scared little man. His life is based on buying friends of Mike. The gift is great for his top 1%er image. You don't think he controls where this $50 million is going? Oh, yes, I do think he controls what's going on with that $50 million. Because, you know, Michael Bloomberg in New York would probably like to stop breathing coal filth. And he'd like for his other 1% buddies to stop breathing coal filth. And so if they can stop breathing coal filth, well, that's good for them. And who gives a rat's ass what happens to a bunch of dumbass little barefoot hillbillies somewhere in Appalachia with their foundations cracked, their windows rattling, and their water turned to something that looks like blood and smells like death? Who gives a damn about them? Not Michael Bloomberg. Ray noting, oh my God, with regard to Tanya McDowell's case. Incredibly horrible. In Michigan, you'll probably do 7 years for murder. The thieves at Bank of America got how much? Yeah, none. None. The Mine Safety Act that controls issues relating to life or death issues relating to coal mining. There's only one felony in all of that, and that's falsifying records. Everything else that you do, it doesn't matter if you kill one miner or a dozen or three dozen or 100. All the rest of the crimes in that code section are misdemeanors. Misdemeanors. Thorn in the side Thursday. And then this. Oh, dear God, this. This came in after the show last night. Texas Betsy alerted me to it. It's a story out of Alabama, Stan, so you know it ain't going to be good. Strap in. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday. This is the story of Savannah Hardin. Nine-year-old Savannah Hardin. Nine-year-old third grader Savannah Hardin. In Alabama. Story got me thinking about one must be careful. Because, you know, just a couple of nights ago I was talking about the arsenic in the rice and the arsenic in the baby formula and the poison in the fruit juice and I lay to a bunch on high fructose corn syrup and talk about how, you know, we gotta give ourselves a fighting chance by avoiding some of this crap, some of this junk. One must be careful lest one be misunderstood in this. You see, Savannah Hardin's dead. She died after heroic measures were taken at Children's Hospital in Birmingham, Alabama, Stan. Her stepmother and her grandmother. Her grandmother is Joyce Hardin Garrard, and her stepmother is Jessica May Hardin. They stand charged in Alabama with murder of 9-year-old Savannah Hardin. Because, you see, in a place like Alabama, the buckle, if you will, of the Bible Belt, they take their Ten Commandments seriously, and when it says, thou shalt not lie, it means, thou shalt not lie! Even though it actually says, thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor, which is entirely a different thing. It kind of gets distilled down to, thou shalt not lie, because, you know, there's not a lot of room on big rocks or plaques that have to sit in grade schools or whatnot. And little Savannah Hardin, she lied. She lied. She rode the bus home from school the other day. And somebody on the school bus gave her chocolate bars. And she ate the chocolate bars. And she liked the chocolate bars. And when she got off the bus, her grandma, Joyce Hardin Garrard, said, you eating candy, girl? You been eating that candy again? You know it'll ruin your supper. And the little girl said, no, grandma, no. I ain't eating no candy. I ain't eating no candy, grandma. I love you. I ain't had no candy. I know you. You've had it. I can smell it on you. You've had a candy bar on the bus. Now tell Mama and come, tell Grandma and come clean. Mama, you just stand here. You need to hear it, too. She's a-lying to me as sure as the day is long. I can spot a liar. You know how it goes. Don't lie to Granny. Granny knows when you're lying, honey. Granny knows. All right, Granny, I ate a chocolate bar on the bus. Granny, I'm sorry, I lied. Well, little girl, you gonna run that chocolate bar off? You gonna run till you won't lie no more? You won't lie to Granny and Ma and Mama no more. You're going to run, little girl. Get out there in the yard, and I want you running. I don't want to see you walking, honey. I want to see you running them lies out of you. And she did. She ran and ran outside their house. It's near Mountainboro, Alabama. It was Friday. She ran and she ran and she ran for 3 solid hours without ere a drop of water nor nothing to eat. She ran. Don't you stop running! You gonna run till you don't want to lie no more! She ran and she ran and she ran till 6:45 p.m. when she started having seizures and collapsed. She didn't die till Monday when her daddy got there. He'd been out of the country working for the government as a contractor, a private contractor of some sort. Took 8 separate flights to make it home. He sat with his baby daughter for 4 hours before they took her off the life support. And take her off of life support they did. But she won't lie anymore. 65 pounds. They sent her body from Birmingham to Huntsville for an autopsy. The neighbors saw the little girl running and running and running and running. But they didn't interfere. They just called the sheriff's office. She had a sodium level that was so low as to be difficult to discover. Mama and Grandma got upset, they claimed, because she had a bladder condition and wasn't supposed to be eating no chocolate. Only problem is there was no evidence of any bladder condition. The entire sheriff's department of Etowah County, Alabama, is sick, shocked, heartbroken. Now, you want to have the cold chills run down you? There's a 3-year-old little boy in the house, too. Dear God, and what do you say in a case like this? Thank God that Alabama has the death penalty. Well, these are white women; they are not going to go to the chair or the horizontal crucifix or whatever it is. They're not going to go. Etowah County School Superintendent Alan Cosby said, obviously, this is such a tragedy. School officials noted that she seemed to be in perfectly good health when she got on the bus to go home. And you'd have to see the sort of pig-eyed, vacantly ignorant look in the eyes of Grandma to understand how a human being could do such a thing to a child. They've each been admitted to bond. They are being held in lieu of $500,000 cash bond each. You know, in the case of murder, that's the only criminal charge that is not entitled to bond. And it astonishes me that in a place like Alabamistan, these two women were admitted to bond. Been eating that chocolate. I ain't got no business eating any chocolate myself these days, but I don't think I'll be eating any for a while. That thing ripped me to shreds when I read it last night. Ray writes in and says, abandon all hope, ye who enter here. This story makes me so sick and heartbroken. I may detest religion, but I believe in God, yet at times like this I gotta ask, where the F God is. I want to cry. Well, you cry if you need to, Ray. Ain't nobody will hold it against you. Robert writes in from Australia, Bob, I simply don't understand how the funding of the U.S. education system works. In Australia, primary and secondary level government schools educate the majority of students. The major part of their cost is met by the relevant state or territory government. Additional costs are covered by asking parents to pay school fees. Those parents who can, do, and those who can't, do not. Parents generally send their children to the local public school, but may, if they wish, send their kids to a different public school, provided a space is available at that school for their child. That is not how it works in the United States of America, Robert. Schools are funded in large part based upon an antiquated system of local taxation. I mean, really, this is the kind of stuff that goes back to King John and Runnymede and all of that. And in places where parents jealously guard the quality of their school system, it can get real hateful if the child ends up in the wrong school. Robert, I have said it before, I will say it again, and I'm not saying this directly to you or directly to anybody. This is a brutal country. This is a harsh country. This is a hateful country. This is a country that has not a dime's worth of compassion for anybody who isn't in at least the $125,000 a year bracket. And them, just maybe. You got to get up into the real folding and walking around money before you get anything resembling justice or mercy from this country or the states, and it's particularly bad in what we've come to refer to as Jesus land. I don't know how these stories keep rising, but rise they do. And I apologize. I apologize if it's too much to cope with. Truly, I do. I do. But somewhere along the way, there has to be an earnest conversation about just how brutal this is. Because it... Understand, it does not have to be. It does not have to be this brutal. It doesn't have to be this way. But this is a country whose ancient Puritan roots are watered by the blood-sodden suffering of those upon whom the majority of society cast their downward gaze. It is as though this country could not function without someone to look at and say, "Ha! Well, there but for the grace of God go I. You see, I am favored by God. I am not like that woman going to prison for 5 years. I am not like those people who ran that woman who ran her granddaughter to death." It is almost as though this country cannot function without such circumstance. And what a brutal reality that is. So here we are at the close of the first hour of Thorn in the Side Thursday. I'm Bob Kincaid. Coming up, your phone calls. You know the phone number, right? 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Yes, the toll-free number is back. And, of course, 304-658-3333 is the direct dial number if you want to save us the money. And you can, and you're able. You don't have to. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. And we will move into the conversation portion of the program in just a matter of some minutes. The Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen is on the way, one of my favorite things every Tuesday and Thursday. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. And we will be back, preferably with your calls. Light it up.
In the timbers of the Nebrio, the wolves are running around. The winter was so hot and cold, frost 10 feet beneath the ground. Don't murder me, I beg you, don't murder me. So
Digging a hole means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, February 23, 2012.
It is perfectly reasonable to try to get to somewhere between $2 and $2.50 a gallon.
The Republican presidential crazy train stops in Fantasyland on gas prices.
Fossil fuels are cheapest only because they're subsidized and they don't pay their costs to society.
While the oil industry fights to keep its subsidies. A mine official is charged in the West Virginia coal mining disaster. Canadian scientists say the Canadian government is suppressing science. Plus, mutant two-headed trout. Yep, mutant two-headed trout.
All of that and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
No teleprompters, no written speeches, the opportunity to see what's in here.
Uh-oh.
What's up here?
Oh, Rick, don't do it.
And what's burning down here?
Oh, you had to go there. There goes my lunch. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, setting aside what's burning down there for Rick Santorum, what else do you have for us today?
Charges have been filed in the Upper Big Branch mine explosion in West Virginia that took the lives of 29 miners 2 years ago. The Charleston Gazette reports that the U.S. Attorney for West Virginia has charged one superintendent of the Upper Big Branch coal mine with felony conspiracy in the probe of the 2010 mining disaster, alleging the Massey Energy Mine superintendent, Gary May, plotted with others known and unknown to put coal production ahead of workers' protection and then covered up serious safety violations, including falsifying records and tampering with equipment that would have revealed dangerous working conditions prior to the explosion. So far, May is only the second low-ranking official charged from mining company Massey Energy.
Thanks for covering that continuing story about the deaths of those miners. That was knocked off the front pages by the BP oil disaster in the Gulf. So glad you're staying on top of it.
The Republican presidential campaign crazy train has stopped in Fantasyland on gas prices. Candidates Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum have been blaming rising gas prices on President Obama.
All because of the radical environmentalist policies of this president.
It is perfectly reasonable to try to get to somewhere between $2 and $2.50 a gallon.
The White House responded to these new attacks, accusing the president of purposely working to raise gas prices, noting that in reality world, the price of oil is set on the global market.
There are no magic solutions to rising gas prices is clearly the effect of a variety of factors on the global price of oil.
Industry experts say the rise we are now seeing is caused by Wall Street speculators and unrest in the Middle East. More drilling will not influence gas prices in the U.S., as shown by the fact that U.S. domestic production of oil right now is the highest it's been since 2003. Presumably, Newt Gingrich knows this. As one analyst put it, prices really only go down when there's an economic downturn, so he suggests that perhaps Gingrich is promising an economic downturn.
How much of the rise in oil prices right now, the speculation, is due to the saber rattling concerning Iran?
I don't know if anyone's actually been able to calculate the amount that influences the price, but it's definitely a factor. Meanwhile, all of the Republican presidential candidates and most Republicans in Congress have signed a pledge to keep in place $4 billion in taxpayer subsidies given to the oil industry every year. President Obama has proposed eliminating those subsidies to reduce the federal deficit. NASA climate scientist Dr. James Hansen, at the annual meeting last week of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, said that the public doesn't realize that these taxpayer subsidies for oil and coal distort the price of energy and are actually a big part of the problem of global warming.
They have to understand that we can only solve the problem of climate change if we recognize that fossil fuels are cheapest only because they're subsidized and they don't pay their costs to society. We could solve it easily and it wouldn't be painful. But we have to overcome the fossil fuel industry and their disinformation.
Also at that meeting, Canadian scientists charge the Canadian government is suppressing science. Scientists who work for the Canadian government say a new policy requiring all press interviews to be approved first by officials who then sit in and direct those interviews is, quote, positively Orwellian, according to scientist Andrew Weaver of the University of Victoria. They say the policy has effectively muzzled science in Canada and the public's access to information amidst the major push by the Harper administration to exploit the oil reserves of the dirty Alberta tar sands. Finally, the discovery of mutant two-headed baby trout in a creek in Idaho where pollution from a phosphate mine is dumped has led several federal agencies to launch a new review of federal standards for selenium pollution in waterways adjacent to mines. The mining company that dumped the pollution into the creeks where the deformed trout were found is requesting to be allowed to dump even more selenium pollution into those creeks.
Don't know what you're complaining about. Everyone knows two heads are better than one. Meanwhile, I've got to drive across the desert today, and with these rising gas prices, well, it seems like that always happens whenever I have to hit the road. Go figure. For more on all of our stories today and the ones we didn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help sponsor the Green News Report and help fill my gas tank. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Hour number two does begin. It is 8 minutes past the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. Update to the story out of Alabamistan. Michael in Sebastopol informing me, and I wrote back saying, please tell me you're kidding. He said, sorry, can't oblige you, Bob. Michael in Sebastopol informing me that the mother of the 9-year-old who was run to death had a baby today. The little 3-year-old boy has a newborn sibling. Gives me chills. Robert in Australia, who noted that the American educational public education system is madness, and it is, added this, the granny who ran her grandchild to death is just an horrific story. I'd find it almost unbelievable had I not spent 13 years at Catholic school. One sports day, one of the little brothers of Mary, the Marist brothers, decided that I was being lazy for leaning against a pole and not trying hard enough, and sentenced me to run around the sport until I changed my mind, something he did to a number of other students that afternoon. Now, a hot, sunny afternoon in Australia is not a good time to be running in circles, so I changed my mind after a lap or two. I had to apologize to the brother for being lazy and was allowed to return to my team. I really hated that brother for years after, and it probably helped lead me to rejecting the Catholic religion. But that poor child, how could anyone do that? Christ, suffer the little children to come unto me. A reminder before we do go to the phones, something good is happening today, and I apologize for being just a downer in the first hour. I don't try to do that. But something good is happening today. You may recall a phone conversation with Margot some weeks back. Margot is in the process of trying to build citizen media herself, and asked me to announce the launch of a new website, which I am happy to do. Insight Out News. Insight, I-N-S-I-G-H-T, Out, O-U-T, News, N-E-W-S.com. Insight Out News. There will be a broadcast at 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 11 p.m. Eastern Time. InsightOutNews.org. Oh, dear. InsightOutNews.org. The mission statement, more or less, says, it's the about part, but it looks like a mission statement to me. It says, Insight Out News was created in the fall of 2011 by Margot Paez to fill a long-existing void in journalism today. We are a grassroots news organization built upon the backs of volunteers and a vision that journalism should not be entertainment nor a commodity. Ooh, that's important. We investigate news that matters to the people. We do not answer to higher corporate power, just like the Horn. Inside Out News believes in the power of the Internet as the new medium for transmitting information. Television and radio are highly controlled media, dominated by money. The Internet is the 21st century's greatest example of what freedom of speech and freedom of the press really means. We see the need for more Internet-specific news shows and hope to help pave the way for others to join in. We do not believe in opinion news. Cable networks and radio shows have more than covered opinion news with their divide-and-conquer commentary. The news should not divide people along party lines. It should unite people around truth. We hope that our news reporting contributes a bit of unbiased truth to the discourse. Insight Out News is currently funded by contributions. Please consider making a donation to our organization so that we may continue to bring you the true independent journalism you've been long searching for. Your search is over. It is here at Insight Out News. InsightOutNews.org. Have a look, check them out, and let us go forthwith to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Now, daggummit. Okay. Next line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Ah, Cossack, what's happening?
You, brother, you. You saw the picture of the grandmother and the step-grandmother, by the way. The stepmother.
The stepmother, but the real grandmother. That's the daddy's mama.
If you look at the names, she's got... Yeah, you're right. Come on, bitch. Yep. Kind of crazy.
Just nasty.
Well, that's the problem. You haven't been running Ferdinand enough.
No. You don't have to run Ferg. Ferg runs all by himself.
Yeah, but you have to be running 3 hours straight.
Yeah, you run them chocolate bars off.
I mean, you'd have a hard time doing that.
Oh, I couldn't run for 10 minutes straight.
Without dropping out.
No, I couldn't do it.
No. And this is, and these people are put in charge of small children, huh? And the wife added another one.
Yeah. And Child Protective Services is, as of the writing of the story I read, was merely investigating to see if it was safe for the 3-year-old to be in the home.
What is there to investigate, especially since let's two of them off on bail?
Well, I mean, $500,000 cash bond is pretty well sufficient to keep them in jail, I suppose. But still, in cases of murder, you're not even entitled to bail. Everything else, you're entitled to a reasonable bail, not murder.
Correct. And this is murder. It's not even manslaughter.
No, this was intentional.
Yeah. And it was reasonable to believe that it would lead to death.
Well, you could probably charge this in a couple of different ways. It's probably not first degree. Maybe it's second, heat of passion murder. But it's also felony murder. Because child abuse is a felony, and deaths that occur during the commission of felonies become felony murder.
Correct.
But then again, that's a little too academic, I guess, because none of it changes. And, I mentioned it. The neighbors. And I guess this is the nature of the country we live in. Maybe Alabama's always been that way, Cossack. But the neighbors sat there and watched the little girl, apparently, be run to death. And they picked up the phone and they called the cops. But at any point in time, any of them could have gone and stepped in and said, "Stop this."
Yep, that's...
But they didn't.
Parental rights.
Well, in 2012 Alabama, Stan, it might get you shot.
Yeah. Exactly.
So it's troubling. And the cops were only called late in the process, if I read this. I mean, at what point? Okay, so a child's running in the yard. How long does a child ordinarily run in the yard before the child stops, Cossack?
Certainly not 3 hours.
Not an hour! I mean, if that child is running for one solid hour, does a light not go on for you in the neighborhood? I mean, even if you don't go over and tell Mama and Grandma to stop making her run, you can walk out with a nice cool glass of lemonade and say, "Honey, you look thirsty, come get you a drink." God, when I was a little kid growing up in Alabama, Stan, we weren't being punished, and neighbor mamas came out, "Now come get you some Kool-Aid, honey."
We don't do that anymore.
Do we not? Is that it, Cossack? Do we not?
No. It's none of your business. I mean, I know what you're talking about. They used to do the same thing to us as kids. You know. But not anymore, it would seem. So what do you think of the settlement?
Which one?
The one with the five banks and the AGs.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm sorry. That's the news site. The news cycle is so swift that because there's also there's some other settlements that I've been studying lately. It's a giveaway. We took your house away, perhaps illegally. Here's $2,000. Thanks a million. Go away.
Yeah.
Really? Thanks a million. Or a billion.
And the banks are only going to be chipping in $5 billion in cash.
And the rest is what? Gravel? Rocks?
No, the rest is us.
Oh. I thought maybe there might be some long-term convertible debentures in there somewhere, Cossack.
Nah. The rest is us. Taxpayer dollars.
Aren't we nice, we taxpayers?
I'm tired of it, Bob. I'm freaking tired of it. I've had it up to here. I just don't... I don't understand. What is it that is so difficult for people to get through their heads? For the last 40 years, we have been cutting and cutting and cutting and cutting the tax rates on the top 0.1% and on corporations. I mean, let's face it, during the Eisenhower years, corporate taxes made up 30% of the yearly tax fall. Now they make up less than 10%. And where does the rest of the money have to come from?
Our hide.
Correct. And all these idiots who are yelling and screaming about fiscal responsibility when you suggest a minor, a modest reduction in the rate of increase, not a cut, but a modest reduction in the rate of increase of the Pentagon budget, they act like a bunch of two-year-olds. They pitch a tantrum, rolling on the floor, screaming, that this is the downfall of the country and what have you. Bob, we only spend as much money as the rest of the world combined in military spending.
Yeah.
What are we defending ourselves against that requires that kind of outlay?
Well, it's not necessarily what we're defending ourselves against. Just remember, for instance, Tucker Carlson noting that Iran is evil and deserves to be annihilated.
Yeah.
You know, some 9-year-old little child licking a rose water ice cream cone deserves to be annihilated. Of course, he's running away from that for all he's worth right now. Tucker is.
Can we strap him to the first bomb that we drop?
I think it'd be more fun if it was the first Tomahawk cruise missile. But you know, no. I can be reasonable. I can compromise.
I mean, Bob, we have over 1,000 military bases strewn across the world. Yeah, I think maybe we could close maybe 500 of them, starting with the ones in Western Europe.
Yeah, I mean, really, why do we, honest to God, I mean, that's a fair question. Why do we need military bases in Germany? Why do we need a naval base in Rota, Spain?
Yeah.
I mean, we got to have somewhere to park the ships when they get across the Atlantic, I guess, but, I mean, couldn't we rent? Well, I guess we do.
Well, we've got England, the unsinkable aircraft carrier. And naval base. But I mean, you know, it's not like we're expecting the Russians to come pouring through the fold of Gap anytime soon.
Yeah, that's kind of over with now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been over for what, 20 years? Pretty damn close.
Yeah, right at.
And. Again, why do we need the massive number of military bases in Japan?
Right.
Especially on Okinawa, where the Okinawans really don't want us there.
Right. Just like, you know, the Filipinos didn't want us at Subic Bay anymore.
Yeah. And we're trying to talk them into letting us go back. you know, just like conversations are ongoing with the Iraqis to please, please, please let us stay at a few of these bases. I mean, Bob, this is beyond comprehension to a reasonable mind. I mean, I know I'm stretching things, but, you know, assuming the people in government are of reasonable mind.
Yeah.
But I mean, good God, close half of our bases in Okinawa. That'll make us very happy. It'll make the Okinawans extremely happy. I mean, for one thing, the Okinawans are sick and tired of having their little teenage girls raped and sodomized.
Yeah, we do have that problem over there.
Yeah. On a constant and regular basis, Bob. This isn't a one-off.
No, not by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah. We have to do it a lot. And people wonder, you know, why is it that people don't love us? What is it?
Stop that. They ain't nothing to wonder about their Cossack. They hate us for our freedoms.
No, they hate us because we act like we're...
They hate us because we're assholes?
Yeah. They hate us because we treat everyone like they're lesser beings.
The word you're looking for is Untermenschen.
Exactly. I mean, talk to the Germans who live around these bases. They are not real thrilled with us. For some odd reason.
Yeah, I wonder what that could possibly be.
Well, I mean, you know, we treat them as though they are our underlings in their own country. I mean, we're not even going to talk about how we behaved in places like Iraq. And this is the thing, you know. You were mentioning earlier in the broadcast about how wolves garner more sympathy than Appalachians do. Well, Bob.
Well, we're just not that. You know, I reckon even our children just aren't that cute, Cossack, and it's just something we got to work on here.
Yeah, well. I mean, besides that, look at the fact that we just cry oceans of tears over our 4,000-some-odd wounded warriors that we lost in Iraq and how terrible it is. And not so much as one tear shed over the over 1 million Iraqis that we have caused to leave this vale of toil and tears
under protest.
Yeah,
indeed.
Yeah. They don't care about you, Bob. They don't care about Iraqis. They don't care about the wolves either. Big Green doesn't care. They're interested in their funding sources more than anything else.
Yeah, and I mean, what do you do, Cossack, when on the one hand they claim to be environmentalists, and yet on the other hand they've got a business deal with the people who are blowing up the mountains.
Yeah. the people that are blowing up the mountains, the people.
I mean, how hard is it just to get out of the credit card arrangement? That cannot account for that much money.
No. I mean, they get a little tip, so they get a couple pennies here and there. Whoopee-doo.
Jesus.
Is it worth your integrity?
I don't know. I keep going back to that line from Casablanca. I reckon drinking all this champagne will take some of the sting out of being occupied.
Yeah. It's Chinatown, Jake.
It is. It is, Cossack. Brother, you have yourself a good evening, all right?
You too, Bob. Take care. Hugs and kisses to the family.
All right. Thanks a lot, my friend.
All right.
Bye now.
Take care. Bye-bye.
That's the Cossack calling from the wilds of North Florida, where in North Florida, lo and behold, they just passed them an anti-Sharia law bill today. No, really. Not kidding. Even though it stalled in Virginia, was struck down in Oklahoma, nah, they did it anyway. It hasn't passed the entire legislature. It has passed out of a Florida House committee, their judiciary committee in their House of Representatives. They want to make sure no foreign law is cited in Florida cases. What happens if there's a case involving a New Hampshire citizen? Now, up there, they have to cite a foreign law in all cases, or at least the Republicans want them to, and maybe it's passed, maybe it hasn't, I don't know. But remember, the Republicans in the New Hampshire legislature want to make sure that all laws relating to rights, civil rights, have the appropriate reference to the Magna Carta. Well, that's a foreign law. No, that's Anglo-American Judeo-Christian law is what that is. Right? Yeah. Florida. Yeah. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Well, Brother Luke, how are you?
Oh, God, hating this temperature up and down. You have to kill me.
Oh, I was about down to short pants today.
75 here.
In the hills of East Tennessee?
See, yeah. And we're supposed to get heavy thunderstorms tonight, and then tomorrow the high's, I think, like 50.
Well, I had to jump off the computer after the show last night. It was the damnedest thing I'd ever heard in February. We had, for a brief period of time, I mean, one of the creepiest thunderstorms I have lately heard blow through here.
We had it last night, too. But like I say, right now I just switched over to the Weather Channel, and right now it's saying right here in beautiful K-Town, it is 70 degrees.
Well, shoot, fire up the barbecue. I'll be right over.
Well, now, tonight we're supposed to have showers, and we're going to have winds up 20 to 30 to 40 miles an hour, I think.
Okay, nail down the barbecue.
Oh, well, I see the clown car, and the boys were out in Arizona this last night.
Mercy, wasn't that something?
Well, you know, the thing is,
it couldn't have been any weirder with acid.
Well, it's sort of like, I love them where they're complaining that Mitt packed the crowd. It's like, well, Mitt thought of it, dummies. If you'd have thought of it, you'd have done it. You know.
Yeah, it's like a scene out of Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou? Why didn't we think of having a little singing girl group? You bunch of dummies.
Well, when our guys in there on the front row standing up holding signs with my face on it, you know, with Sandor's face on it going, yay, yay, yay.
Yeah, speaking of signs in the audience, did you see that?
Mm-hmm. I didn't get to watch all of it.
Our chat room moderator, Lottie, sent this along earlier today with the query, I wonder if the cameraman still has a job? Because at some point in time, some CNN cameraman panned out over the crowd during a break. We'll be back right after this from the American Petroleum Institute, poisoning your life now, blah, blah, blah. And so as they pull back from the panel, the cameraman pans out into the audience where there's a bunch of idiots with signs, right?
Yeah.
Apparently, though, there was one person who was not an idiot, Brother Luke.
Uh-oh. Somebody snuck one in?
And he panned right up on it real big. It said, Frothy Santorum. And then there was a reference to lube. Yeah, I mean...
Oh, yeah, that works. That works for me.
I sat there and watched it because, you know, Lottie sent it and said, you got to watch this all the way to the end. And I did. And it, what the?
Well, the one that got me was when John King asked the question. It wasn't John King's question. It was off of the CNN.com, whatever, you know, where people had emailed in questions. When he asked the birth question. And they were just, oh, my God, how dare you ask that? It's like, what do you think you all have been talking about for the last week? And you're surprised somebody asked a question about it? You know, they were acting like, oh, you shouldn't be asking those questions.
Yeah, well, I mean...
about it for the last 10 days.
Yeah, but by all means, let's make sure we don't have any sort of substantive discussion of it.
Well, you, of course, saw John King put his tail between his legs and asked the question and just kind of went, okay, let's go on.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, I'm surprised he didn't just go up and kiss him. Or at least the ring, kiss the ring.
But, like I say, some of this stuff is just hilarious. You know, when you sit here and watch some of this stuff with Santorum, it's like he's acting like, why are people jumping on me? He's like, well, because you're the leader. Guess what? All those stupid things you said, people are now starting to go back and read them. You know, when you were sitting over there in the lunatic fringe, congratulations, people took stuff down that you said. You know, when you made those stupid speeches on the floor, you know, of the Senate, you know, for years, guess what? The cameras were on. So we got a whole bunch of tape to sit and go through on you, dummy.
Yeah, but, you know, it's kind of like watching a game. Let's see. Let me think of two teams that I absolutely despise. I don't know. It's like watching Georgia play Notre Dame. I don't know who I don't want to win more.
You're just sitting there saying,
but, and it's the same thing with this clown car act. I desperately want Willard Romney to lose Michigan. I want to see it.
I'm hoping we'll have another Iowa and Rhode Island. I want it to be down where it's like 3 a.m. and they're still counting votes. You know,
but it's
don't know who's won it.
Well,
we don't know for another couple weeks because some of those ballots have disappeared.
Nah, because what's important, I think, here, Luke, we need for Willard to lose by 10 or 12 points.
Well, unfortunately, the way the numbers look,
because
right,
then all hell breaks loose.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, I've heard one or two of the people on the different shows talking about. They said, you know, if Mitt loses by 10 points, it's like everybody hide the sharp objects.
You know, and take his belt and shoelaces, yeah.
Windows, so don't step out.
Yeah, well, hide his belt and shoelaces because he may head off to be a god on that planet a little early.
This too is true. You know,
but no, it's that the person who was described as a high-ranking anonymous Republican senator, it was the loss of Michigan that high-ranking anonymous Republican senator said would trigger a full-on attempt to go out and draft somebody because, you know, the statement, and I've read...
That'd make life really good going, because I say it's too late to do that. I mean, they're past that point, I think.
Well, I can draft somebody at the convention.
Well, yeah, I mean, but you know what I mean? I'm just curious to see what happens next week with Super Tuesday. You know, because as we know, Newt is falling down the hole faster and faster, and he's trying to swim apparently with the anchor around his throat.
Yeah, he may have a little more chain than he can swim with.
Oh, it's one of those things. It's like
But, you know, Sheldon Adelson...
Vegas is like, yeah, like, I'll give him $30, $40 million if I have to keep him in the race.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just going to love it when it gets past this and they start the regular one and all of a sudden George Soros writes about a $20 million check to Obama's super PAC and watch them just scream and holler and whine.
George Soros is buying the American government.
You get him.
Oh, Glenn Beck could have a baby.
Oh, but anyway, you get him, you get Warren Buffett, you get Bill Gates, you get the guy from Virgin Airlines,
Branson.
Branson, that's it. Yeah, get like three or four of them each, give like about $10 million apiece. And just watch the eyes rolling in their heads. It'll be so much fun. You know, Rush will scream as like an awful soprano.
No, he's loud. Yeah, God. Well, I worry about that because heaven knows what he'd do to his wife down in that pit.
Well, luckily he's back there in his war room or whatever that thing is. So hopefully the door will fuse shut. Can't get out.
That or you know maybe that. See, I keep hoping that there's something out there that'll cause old Flush to just eat a big old handful of oxys because there's no way he's still clean. You can't talk like he does and still no.
Yeah. Well, let's get on something else on this Virginia thing.
Yeah.
Now, have they pulled it, or are they still trying to do this modified version now?
Well,
two or three different versions.
The modified external ultrasound thing, I think, is still under consideration. But they did back away from the personhood thing today, didn't they?
The thing was, though, I was listening to one of the commentators last night was talking about it, and he said, the thing of it is, though, if you look at what they did, the way they rewrote it, you still have to do it. It's like essentially, but it takes the onus off of the government and it puts the onus on the doctor. You know what I mean? Where you?
Oh yeah, it's still a mandatory ultrasound, but
you can't use a regular ultrasound in that first 3 months and get what they're claiming they want, the regular non-invasive ultrasound.
Right. Oh, that's a good point.
So you know, it's sort of like, well, we're telling the doctors they have to do this, but using just the jelly on the belly one, that won't do it. Yeah. I know there's technical terms, excuse me for not using them. But you know what I mean? The exterior ultrasound won't give it the detail they're demanding in that law. So it's sort of like, yeah, we're taking it out, but we're leaving it in there too. Just if you just have to read it. If you go back today and you want to look up something fun to listen to, did you get to listen to Fresh Air this morning?
No, I didn't get a chance.
I had the guy on that is Colbert's guy who helped him set up his super PAC.
Oh.
And he's the guy that used to be like the Federal Election Commission member. And it was fun. They talked for about a half an hour. Then they had the guy on that actually brought the Citizens United case. So it's one that you might want to go back and listen to just to see the fun of that.
Oh, that does sound fun.
Oh, did you get my email on the thing on Lenore City about the atheist? About the newspaper editor and the high school not being allowed to print her story.
Oh, yes.
But you know what? I bet you 10-1 if somebody was wanting to go on there and talk about how much they love
Jesus. Yeah.
We can put out a special edition for that.
Oh, it's extra.
4-star banner, man. Yes. But, no, like I say, it's one of those things I don't want to get my hopes up too high. You know, you never know. But I tell you what, some of these things, you're just kind of sitting around just waiting. It's like watching in the old World War II movies, watching walk across the minefield. You're just waiting to see who hits the next one. I mean, it's just, you know, because, like I say, Newt's going to immolate, but at the same time, Newt's got the money now. Newton can keep on fighting. And now we've got amateur ophthalmologist,
libertarian gynecologist Ron Paul?
Yeah. But now apparently he's decided to work with Mitt and break Santorum's kneecaps.
Well, it's whoever is the flavor of the week. Whoever's riding high gets brought down. But theoretically this is the last pageant for a while, but again, if Michigan doesn't come out to Willard's good, then I predict there will be more pageants.
Well, it's
kind of like Groundhog Day.
Well, you know, it's like they said, you know, what was it? No, we got Michigan, Arizona, and
yeah, and those two are on the same day.
Yeah. But like I said, then the next week we get beautiful Super Tuesday. Cuz we already had early voting start here.
Oh Lord, yes.
So I've already been voted my time.
So I mean, don't you think that Super Tuesday works out to Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist's benefit?
Yes, indeedy. That's the question, though.
I mean, isn't Super Tuesday
off enough though? You know, and how far will Prophet Ricky fall before then? Because some of them around here are saying, oh, it's Santorum. You know, some of the newspaper around here are saying it should be Santorum instead of amateur paleontologist Newt Gingrich. you know, they're seeing he's got the momentum per se. But at the same time, I think he's, like I say, I think he's right on, stepping on the edge of the cliff and about to do a Wile E. Coyote.
Well, I certainly would like to see, to one degree or another, whether it's Willard's, I was a severely conservative governor. I love that phrase.
Did you see the thing with Jason Alexander apparently tweeted today?
No.
Somewhere Mitt had said something about something they'd done on Steinfeld. And he tweeted back, put out a tweet, and he said, "Yes, Governor, if you were the same person you were 2 years ago, I could almost vote for you." You know, said, "But I don't recognize you anymore." It's not exactly what he said, but that's the gist of it. You know,
right. But whether it's severely conservative governor or any of the bizarre things that the frothy one says, or
I'm surprised they don't show him with pictures of Ted Kennedy.
The latest lunacy from Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist, or just libertarian gynecologist Ron Paul, every one of them sooner or later straps on the Acme rocket skates and goes for a ride, and I just want to see him do it all at the same time, right into that cliff face. See, dadgummit, you hauled out the Wile E. Coyote analogy, and you just got to work with it.
Well, I understand. Hey, I'm just waiting to see which one of them comes out with the catapult first. You know?
Bam! Right into the ground. Oh, God. There's a beauty to having been raised on Warner Brothers cartoons, Luke.
We got some young kids now working with us. They're like in their 20s, and they were talking the other day about cartoons they were watching. And I'm sitting there going, I walk in there, and like they're in their 20s. I'm 53, and I walk in there, and I just list off like Space Ghost, Herculoids, Frankenstein Jr., The Impossibles, you know, a whole bunch of Shazam, a whole bunch of stuff, and they just kind of look at me like, huh?
Oh, I showed Ferg the few extant clips of the Mighty Hercules.
Oh, okay. With the ring?
Yeah, with the ring and the repetitive satyr Ferg sat there dumbstruck. Dad, these are the crappiest cartoons that were ever made. Yes, they were, son. And you know what you know what social value they had? I asked him, and he said, "No, what's that?" I said, "They made being homesick from school absolutely unbearable. You could not wait to get well and get back. Because one more day of Clutch Cargo or the Mighty Hercules, and you'd just be up on the roof playing Mary Poppins with the umbrella. Honest to God, you would."
Well, I know, you can always show him the best. You can hunt up the year of Johnny Quest and show him.
I always thought Johnny Quest was kind of quality, but you haven't lived until you've watched a little Clutch Cargo.
Oh, I know. I mean, with the, I don't know what they called it, the mouth in cartoon?
Yeah, I mean, Conan O'Brien went on to have great success with it. But, and of course, the dog, Paddlefoot.
Oh, God. What do you mean? I mean, you know, we can go back.
Can't remember the quadratic equation, but I can damned well remember Paddlefoot.
Well, you know, I mean, we can go back up to Snagglepuss and Huckleberry Hound and...
Oh, those great, yeah, the great Hanna-Barbera's, absolutely, but
yeah.
But for me, the gold standard will always be Chuck Jones, and, yeah, and in fact, that autobiography that he wrote, Chuck Amuck,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
is absolutely brilliant reading, because he talks almost in scholarly fashion about the characters from the Looney Tunes and mentions the fact that, you know, Bugs always wins the day. Bugs isn't running around looking for trouble. He only gets vindictive after somebody's already screwed with him. But he pointed out, Chuck Jones did, Daffy Duck is every man. Daffy Duck is all of us.
Oh, my favorite one on that was years and years ago they had the one where it was, Daffy had caught, the Tasmanian devil had broken out of the zoo. And he had to play music to get him back to the zoo. And they get to the very end, and he gets him into the cage, closes the cage. They give him like $5,000. He's walking by, and one of the dollars slides under the door. And he runs in there, beats the tar out of the Tasmanian devil. He says, "I'm a coward, but I'm a greedy coward."
Oh, exactly. And you know what? That's why I'm convinced now that Daffy Duck is a libertarian. You know, I'm rich. I'm rich. I'm socially secure. I'm comfortably well off.
Well, I remember years ago. Remember Babylon 5?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now we don't like him as a radio host, but this is, you remember Jerry Doyle?
Absolutely.
who played the security chief. He had a Daffy Duck poster in his thing, and one of the aliens was in there and goes, "What's this?" He says, "God of frustration."
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. Jerry Doyle is an honorary astronaut and a former member of the cast of Babylon. Have you ever heard the opening to his show? I mean, no. Jesus, it's just pitiful. It's so sadly ego-driven. A member of the cast of the acclaimed Babylon 5 and an honorary astronaut. Now, here's Jerry Doyle. Hello, America. Don't liberals suck? You know.
Oh, God. Hey, but I tell you what, let's go on and talk to some other people. And you have a good evening, and like I say, keep batting down the hatches, who knows which way the storms are going.
Well, if it's coming to you, it's coming to me. It runs right up the chain, you know?
Yeah, I know. Well, it's one of those things they told us, like tonight, like about 9 or 10 here, we're supposed to get thunderstorms and winds, you know, 20 to 40, and who knows what.
Well, hell, that means we'll get frogs and locusts by 2.
That's what I was thinking, but you know how that goes.
All right.
All right, bud, you take her easy, and like I say, hopefully it won't be 10 below tomorrow.
I hope not. It's awful good to hear from you, Brother Luke.
I'll see you.
Bye now.
Bye.
From the hills of East Tennessee, fellow Appalachian, that's Brother Luke. Jack just wrote in from Shreveport with something, and this is a telling observation, going back to the little girl in Alabama. He says, Bob, it occurred to me that not only is it strange for neighbors to take no action over a period of 3 hours, but it also seems strange to me that a child would not stop running or would throw a temper tantrum or cry or something sometime before 3 hours' time. The conclusion that Jack draws, that child must have been scared to death to stop running. Ron and Raleigh noting, amateur paleontologist? Bob, whenever you mention Newt Gingrich, amateur paleontologist, I see old Newt in a pith helmet, shorts, and one of those vests with all the pockets. Hard to scrub that vision. Yeah, that's the one. Are you familiar with it's kind of an inside joke in Hollywood. It's called the Wilhelm scream. It comes from some 1950s B movie, but it gets used over and over and over in various and sundry films. George Lucas and Steven Spielberg are both fond of it. And yeah, I too, Ron, can just see Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist, just swatting away the undergrowth with his trusty machete, his pith helmet on, his khaki Bermuda shorts, and yes, one of those vests with all the pockets. And then he steps into the quicksand. That's the Wilhelm scream. I love images like that. And by the way, it's been kind of a... this in from David in Tennessee. Subject line, wolves versus po-folks youngins. Look, Bob, it ain't rocket science. The wolf is the animal equivalent of the noble savage. Said Wolfie does pups, kills the occasional weak deer to feed the family, and photographs real well on National Geographic specials. But now, po-folks youngins, well, they're that way. You know what that way means, Bob. You know, poor folks usually are. They need a bath. They need a few teeth fixed. They need a few diction and grammar lessons. They need that list of makeovers because Mama and Daddy don't know no better than to do them youngins that away. We know that's the state of affairs because them film photo editors have been pushing that BS meme for what, 75 years? Well, hell, Bob, they're that away because they like it that away. So the rich guy running New York City wants his air cleaned nicely, but he dares not stop the profits coming from the ruination of Appalachia via coal sales to India. No, no, can't interrupt that cash flow. And besides, them po-folks kids, they gonna look like that anyway. Just ain't real pretty sending out a Sierra Club request for donations with a picture of some little hillbilly kid with Mountain Dew mouth. Right? Yeah. But we all do need a giggle from time to time. Last night, you may recall, we had a conversation about these godforlorn, godforsaken Mormons out there baptizing people who had been murdered in Hitler's death camps. Most recently, and notably, Anne Frank. Yeah, they baptized Anne Frank after she was dead so she could go and be a good and loyal concubine to some dead Mormon on another planet. Don't blame me. I'm not making stuff up. That's their religion, and that's how it is. But, you know, your rights end where my nose begins, or where dead Holocaust Jews' noses or corpses begin. And it's so disgusting and so upsetting, so offensive, especially when you consider the fact that, you know, the Mormon Church took oodles and oodles, I mean, enough money to burn a sopping wet herd of elephants in stacks of $100 bills. And them wet, too. They took all that money and poured it into California to try to make sure that a couple of guys couldn't pick out a China pattern together. Or a couple of women pick out, you know, those little matching seashell soaps to go in their soap dishes when they was all married up and everything. And monogram towels in the bathroom that nobody gets to use less than you have company. They took that and used it for that, and did so proudly. They despise them some gay people, them Mormons. Lordy, they despise some gay people. Throw you right up and out of the church. If they catch you being all gay and all, you know. Well, somebody finally done something about it. Our friend Jeanette in Minnesota was listening to the whole Anne Frank thing last night. And I got up this morning, and right after I got done having a hissy about the Sierra Club, I did at least get a giggle. She sent me a link to the most magnificent website I may well have ever seen on the interweb tubes, because it's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. And I am so glad that Jeanette sent me an internet last night. Because, you know, those of you who have smartphones and such, you're probably familiar with Angry Birds. It's that deceptively simple little video game for your smartphone that you can literally while away hour after hour playing, like, say, if you're sitting in an airport or waiting to be called back to the dentist or something like that. Well, I have now found something that has replaced that for me, courtesy of Jeanette. In fact, I sent this off to our dear friend Peter Godbold earlier today, and he wrote back and said, I think it's the most wonderful thing I've ever seen on the internet, Bob. The website is simply this. All dead Mormons are now gay.com. All dead Mormons are now gay.com. Let me say that again. All dead Mormons are now gay.com. You know how they baptize dead people? Well, this is a website that gays up dead Mormons. The text to the very simple website says, sadly, many Mormons throughout history have died without having known the joys of homosexuality. With your help, these poor souls can be saved. Simply enter the name of your favorite dead Mormon in the form below and click convert. Presto, they're gay for eternity. There is no undo. Don't know any dead Mormons? Click the Choose a Mormon button, and we'll find one for you. You're welcome. I tweeted this earlier and was promptly informed by direct tweet back from Free Exploration is the tweet handle. Brigham Young converted, LOL. I think Brigham Young has been repeatedly converted. My God, it's like he's pulling some sort of gay train now there in the afterlife from all the people turning him gay. Because I converted him. I also converted Joseph Smith. But then I started using the handy-dandy Choose a Mormon function, just as I'm doing now, searching the genealogical index, you know, because it's online, all these dead Mormons. And look, there's dead Mormon Donna Hughes. And click the birth button. The green button turns, yeah, she's converted. Dead Mormon Donna Hughes is now gay in the afterlife. Here, let's choose another. Why, there's dead Mormon Willard Lewis. Oh, it turned purple. Willard Lewis has been converted to gay in the afterlife, and there are no undos. Like I said, this is more fun than Angry Birds. All dead Mormons are now gay.com. You're gonna enjoy it, I promise. Now, there's a good question, Ron and Raleigh. Bob, did the Latter-day Saints baptize the members of the wagon train that they murdered in the Mountain Meadows Massacre? Just asking. They don't like to talk about the Mountain Meadows Massacre. They prefer to talk about the miracle of the bug-eating birds or some such. Oh, dear, it's going around now. All dead Mormons are now gay is beginning to make its way around the Twitterverse. Thank you, Ultra Verified. All dead Mormons are now gay. .com. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. So I suppose here at 3 minutes past the hour, we should probably take a wee bit of a break. Heck, I like to play music. I can't help that what David in Tennessee wrote just kind of sticks with me. You know, about why it is that we don't really do so good, us Appalachians, engendering the sympathy of a largely disinterested nation. We're just kind of, well, Appalachia is, I guess, I don't know, are we the little colony of white trash for the rest of the nation? Sometimes it sure feels that way. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice.
Oh, Lady Brick, Elson Blunt, she's my trashy little one. Excuse me, I must light her cigarette. Do I love her? No, I don't. Will I leave her? No, I won't. C'est la vie, Lady Brick, Elson Blunt. Well, she's got a heart of gold. She's really not that old. You'll find no Jean Paul Sartre on her shelf. She can hardly write her name. She's kind of plump and slightly lame. But with her, I can be my sorry self. Oh, Lady Brielson Blunt, my wonderful little one. Excuse us, we must glide across the floor. Is she pretty? No, she's not. Is she pleasing? Yes. What? Let us be, Lady Brielson Blunt. Let her breathe. Hell's on blunt. Let her breathe.
Canadian members of the Horn audience know what the title of that song was. Not to mention any Cajun friends we may have. That, of course, the inimitable Phil Lee. Les débris, ils sont blancs. The trash, it is white. Tell you a little secret. I got to break bread with Phil Lee over the last weekend during Bergen, my journey. And what an amazing talent he is. Tremendous wit, magnificent mind, darn fine guitar player, and dinner conversationalist par excellence. Of course, it didn't hurt that the dinner at my head writer, David in Tennessee's table, was stocked with gumbo and good brown rice. Sausage and chicken for the gumbo and nice salad and mercy sakes, it was good. Now, daggummit, our blogger Texas Betsy, no green news. That ran in the last hour, Betsy. You're late to the show. But yeah, not that I'm trying to. But yeah, there. You'll have to catch it on the podcast. It was a very good green news. But, no, it was a magnificent, magnificent weekend and, a fabulous dinner. And, I have been for a while now anyway, but I'm even more of a Phil Lee fan than I already was. He was, among other things, especially gracious to my son. Ran out to the car and grabbed his guitar when Ferg said, "Well, I'm learning to play." Put it in his hands there in the living room and said, "Show me." And Ferg began to noodle around, and after a few minutes, Phil looked at him and said, "You ever had any lessons?" Ferg said, "No, just figuring stuff out." Phil let out a little whistle and shook his head and said, "Well, damn." It was a wonderful moment. By the way, this breaking update at 9 minutes past the hour, dead Mormon Eric Hall has been converted to gayness for all eternity, and in process, dead Mormon Linda Peterson, yes, she is an eternal lesbian now. Ain't that fun? All dead Mormons are now gay. .com. Yeah, that's right. See, I'm so obsessed with being good that I don't even allow myself to think about things like dessert no more. But you know what? My blood sugar tolerated a homemade bread pudding at the end of that meal on Saturday evening. Good, good, good. Yummy, even. A little scoop of vanilla ice cream on top of it. Yes, yes, Lord. Raisins, pecans. Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, this looks fun. Cindy writing in from the Great Northwest. You can find great lists to convert to gay Mormons here. Wikipedia, Mitt Romney, early life and education. Just wiki your Mormon and baptize their dead relatives. I'm having such fun, I put away my solitaire game while supper cooks. Not half as much fun as the dead Mormons are. Can you imagine? You're just cruising along on your little private planet there, and the next thing you know... Ethel? Mamie? What are you two women folk doing? Are you supposed to be my wives? I can't... This is good fun. Good, clean, healthy fun. Oh, and by the way, need I remind you, the phone lines are open. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Yes, the toll-free lines are back, and we are happy to pay the freight. 304-658-3333 is the direct dial number. And as I said, thanks going out to Brandon for being the first to kick in to this evening's fundraising effort, and thus far the only person to kick in to this evening's fundraising effort. Much appreciated. We're trying to get to $600, 60 people, so now we need 59. 59, 10, thrifty 250 contributors between now and, well, technically till Wednesday, but I'm not going to be here Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of next week. You will hear this week's Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday show. Okay. Yeah. I got to be careful because I can find myself running over to alldeadmormonsarenowgay.com real easy like. And just sitting there and clicking it like more fun than Angry Birds. This is not so much fun. So by all means, let's get back to it. It is, after all, Thorn in the Side Thursday. This is the story. It must be Oklahoma night on Thorn in the Side Thursday because, you know, we had Senator Inhofe out there hoping that maybe my grandchildren can be poisoned a little bit more earlier in the program, and lots of other grandchildren and children as yet ungotten and undreamt of here in Appalachia. And now we've got another Oklahoma stand legislator, Representative John Sullivan, who is a member of the United States House of Representatives, who was addressing constituents about the need, we got to do something about this awful spending that Obama is doing. He's going to break us. He's going to destroy America. And Representative John Sullivan is a full-on supporter of Representative Paul Ryan's I've Got Mine, Screw You budget. And he was explaining to some constituents, Representative John Sullivan was, just how hard it would be to try to get, even though the House passed it, to try to get that budget passed the Senate of the United States of America.
My biggest concern is how our federal government continues to escalate in spending. And while we have a good presentation from you and other legislators that say, well, we need to cut spending, we need to cut spending. I think everybody in this room probably has to speak to Paul Bank and say, like, up our credit line another $100,000.
I just got to say this before we get to the fun part. I continue to just be amazed that all of these lily-white, pasty-faced, doughy-white people were absolutely unconcerned by government spending as long as it was a pair of white oil men from Texas who were doing the spending. But now, oh, golly gee, they had that come-to-Jesus moment, and they're all worried about all that money that's getting spent. Well, we're going broke. America's going bankrupt. It's just like Greece. Well, it's not, but don't tell them.
And to my knowledge, you've voted several times, probably more than 10, to raise the ceiling on that debt. When can we expect someone to take the bull by the horns and actually aggressively deal with this? Because I'm not as concerned about it as I am for myself, as I am for my children and my grandchildren. Who's going to pay for all this?
I couldn't agree with you more. And we need to do that. We've done that. Like I said, after this last election, the first order of business was pass the budget. We got $6.2 trillion. Now, I voted for that. I supported the Paul Ryan budget. Sent it over to the Senate. Now, I live with some senators. I yell at them all the time. I grabbed one the other day and shook them. And I'd love to get them to vote for it. Boy, I'd love that. Other than me going over there with a gun and hold it to their head and maybe killing a couple of them, I don't think they're going to listen unless they get beat. The House has been doing its job. We passed not only a budget and sent over to the Senate, we hadn't passed a budget in over 1,000 days. We also sent regular EPA's bill on the EPA stuff. We're just going to vote on that tonight. Get jobs going in America. Get it out of the way so people can go. Send that over there. We've been looking at Dodd-Frank so people can lend money to these huge banks. They're getting regulated too. They can't even give loans to people. We've been doing that, sending it over.
You caught the meat of that, didn't you? I know the audio was not the best that you've ever heard here on the horn. I was not responsible for the audio quality. But that's Representative John L. Representative John Sullivan, Pig Licking from Oklahoma, who explained to his constituents who were worried about the debt ceiling now that that one is in the White House these last 3 years. He's going to give away all that money to you know, his kind. And speaking in terms that someone from Oklahoma Stan can understand, Representative John Sullivan made it clear to his constituent that the Paul Ryan budget was not going to pass the United States Senate. We will assume for a moment that the mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking right-wing constituent at least had a functioning understanding that a bill has to be passed by both houses before it could be signed into law. But explain to his mouth agape, drooling, lips move while he reads, you know, kind of supporter, that the best way to go about getting the Paul Ryan budget passed would be to go over to the United States Senate on the other side of the Capitol building and put a gun to senators' heads and maybe shoot a couple of them. Quote, other than me going over there with a gun and holding it to their head and maybe killing a couple of them, I don't think they're going to listen unless they get beat. Now, can you imagine for 1 minute, let's say Representative Keith Ellison of Minnesota, let's say that Representative Ellison suggested that the only way to get a bill through the Senate would be to go over and kill a couple of them. Well, what would be the response? Glenn Beck would be on the air in the morning. Rush Limbaugh would be on the air at noon. The Hannity, that life support system for a haircut, would be on the air in the late afternoon. The Savage Wiener would be on the air at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, screaming, "That Muslim Keith Ellison says he wants to start killing senators! We told you! We told you what a menace them liberals were!" A flushed and flustered Wolf Blitzer would ask breathless questions of Congressman Ellison about why he, a Muslim, felt the need to kill good Christian white senators. Right? I don't like the fact that that is true, but it most damned well assuredly is true. Other than me going over there with a gun and holding it to their head and maybe killing a couple of them, I don't think they're going to listen. What they need is a good killing. Jesus, these right-wing freaks are turning into something out of a Flannery O'Connor short story. She would have been a pretty good woman if there would have been somebody there to kill her every day of her life. That's the misfit from the short story, A Man Is Hard to Find. Maybe killing a couple of them. Now, of course, once the bell was rung, and understanding that bells cannot be unrung, Representative John Sullivan, our Oklahoma stand spokesperson, said, "We offer sincere apologies to anyone he offended and for using a poor choice of words to make his point." That was no poor choice of words. Those were exactly the words he meant to use, because that is how Republicans think in terms of acceptable means of getting their desires. They will kill for them. For the 1%, they will kill, they will lie, they will cheat, they will steal, they will rob, they will rape, they will barn burn, they will plunder, they will stream litter. There is nothing, no sin under the Son of Almighty God that they will not commit in order to appease the rapacious bastards who are absolutely dead set on the notion that they get to have every stinking penny that yet jingles in the pocket of what used to be a middle class in this country. We apologize for anybody who was offended. You know, there was a day in the Congress of the United States that after he said what he said, someone else, some other member of the Senate perhaps, would have the right to go up, slap his jowly face with a white glove, throw it at his feet, and tell him, "I'll see you at sunrise, you asshole." Sorry, that one slipped out. We're sorry if anyone was offended. We had a poor choice of words. This is how they think. This is their idea of a power structure. You won't do what I want you to do. What you're going to need is a good killing. This is also, I might add, the way we wound up with that little dust-up in 1860. And it wasn't said on the floor of the House or anything, so it's not like he can be censured. No, the ultimate form of censure would be for someone with such loathsome ideas to be voted out of public service. But that's the problem. The people who sent him to from Oklahoma stand to Washington, D.C. in the first place agree with him! I remember when the college Republicans joked about getting the majority in the Senate. "We had to kill Paul Wellstone, but by God, we got the majority, didn't we?" That was the president of the college Republicans some 8 years ago. Whew. They ain't joking. They ain't kidding. Gay Mormons, what's the point, Jim? What's the point in baptizing dead Jews from the Holocaust? This is just one of those moments where sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. Just is. Clayton reporting, Ryan Morris is now gay and a pagan. Oh, that planetary life, as this little website spreads around, Mormon planetary life is becoming very, it's getting weirder by the moment. The next thing you know, I mean, there'll be monogrammed towels in the afterlife bathrooms and show tunes on the stereo and, oh, maybe some 130 beats per second disco playing there in the afterlife moron tabernacle choir. AllDeadMormonsAreNowGay.com. Yeah, score plus one for Cindy in the Great Northwest. They had a poor choice of words, Bob. These guys have a poor choice of sentiment. Yes. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Cassie.
Well, hey, Cassie.
How are you?
I'm well.
I'm doing well too, but you're probably not surprised. I was a little upset about the story about the little girl in Alabama.
Yeah, I'm a little bit wrought myself.
I think who was it that wrote in and said that you know, how scared she must have been.
No, that was Jack in Shreveport, yeah.
Yeah, that she was scared out of, you know, scared to death, literally. There's something seriously wrong. There's something seriously wrong with those people.
And she's got a brand newborn baby now, too.
And do you think the state's going to let her keep the baby?
Well, apparently they've left the little boy in the home. Well, daddy's home now, so the little boy's probably with daddy, because granny and stepmom are in the pokey, I presume.
And then the dad came home to take care of the baby and to do the funeral.
Yeah, because he was a government private contractor eight plane flights away from Alabama.
Well. Iraq and Afghanistan. Well, I don't know about Afghanistan. Iraq's only like two or three planes. Depends on how he had to travel.
Right. Don't know, and don't know what kind of contractor either.
Yeah. Well.
I know.
I can't even. I don't even know what to say. I mean, I just. My heart breaks for that. She couldn't stop.
No, and the neighbors wouldn't even walk out and offer her a cold glass of water.
I guess everybody was scared of the grandmother.
Well,
but it sounds like it was the mother and the grandmother.
Yeah, it was both of them.
They were in it together.
Yes, the stepmother and the grandmother. The natural grandmother and the stepmother. Because here's a really sadly ironic angle or twist of the story. The birth mother, who was divorced from the father, lost custody of the children because the father alleged that she had allowed the little boy to ingest some sort of poison. And that was sufficient to get full custody vested in the daddy, who then went off to parts unknown and left the child in the both children in the care, custody, and control of stepmommy and grandmother.
So she lost permanent custody.
Apparently, yes. Yes. Well, the divorce was ended by settlement, so. She probably agreed to give custody to the father.
And he left them with two witches. Not, I mean, I shouldn't say witches, right? He left them with
two monsters.
Two monsters.
and he got to be with his unconscious 9-year-old daughter for 4 hours before they pulled the plug last Monday.
Do they have the death penalty now, then?
Oh, they surely do. I wouldn't expect either stepmommy or grandma to get it, though, because they're white.
Well.
And you know, that's a conflict for me because I don't support the death penalty in the first place.
Well, I don't either, but I don't know.
You would not be too terribly torn up if you were to read that a giant piano fell out of the sky and squished them both. Is that what you're trying to get at, Cassie?
Exactly.
Yeah, me either. Anvils, pianos. Yeah.
You have a piano and a crane around?
Not one that I can get down to Gadsden, Alabama, right offhand. No.
Okay.
It is, as we say, a fur piece from Princeton, too.
Yeah. Fur piece, indeed. Wow. I mean, that story.
Well, and the more I think, I mean, the grandma and the stepmom are obviously monstrously ignorant, hateful, viciously stupid. But the more I think about this story, the more I don't know how many neighbors saw her running.
And if they knew why she was running.
Or for how long they saw her running. But apparently they saw her running long enough that eventually they did pick up the phone and drop the dime to the sheriff's department. Because, I mean, just think about it for a minute, Cassie. If you just look out the window and there's some little child running around in their yard, well, that's what children do when they're blowing off steam after sitting in a desk all day in, you know, third grade or fourth or fifth. Whoever had to have seen that this had gone on for a long enough time to become something well past unusual in order to pick up the phone and call 911. And the inquiry... And I'm not trying to say I would do any better or anybody else would, but the inquiry is, why don't you walk outside and without confronting Granny or anything, just say, "Sugar, come here and have a glass of lemonade." I had a neighbor lady when I was a little boy growing up. When I first started going to school, you know, it was a time when you could walk to school, and I walked 3 blocks to school and back.
I always walked to school until high school.
And I had a neighbor lady who would be standing there and would give me a stick of grape chewing gum when I walked around the corner behind her house on the way home.
See, and now your parents would wonder why she was becoming too friends with you.
I know. But no, it'd be just fine by me if we could get a voiceover from Chuck Jones or Tex Avery saying, "Now right here in frame 1327, cue the Ajax execution kit to fall from the sky on the stepmom and the grandma." This is the thing that frustrates me about that divine justice we're all the time hearing about, Cassie.
And all these Christians, they would rather spend their time making sure that, you know, we can't go on the pill.
Right. Yeah, because it's not nearly as much of a horror that a little girl would be run to death as it is that a 14-year-old wouldn't get pregnant. See, for you and me and the rest of the Horn family, Cassie, that causes just head-splitting cognitive pain.
It's just pain. It's just nothing but pain.
But if you're a Republican, it causes nothing. Right, exactly. That they we need to we don't want government intrusion into people's lives when they're running their little 9-year-olds to death. But see, Jesus don't want nobody taking the pill.
Like Jesus had anything to say about.
Right, but you know they'll you know, I mean, you know, they will flog Jesus all whatever it takes to get their political way. Yeah, they're more concerned with ultrasounds of things that don't even look human than they are with little 9-year-old girls getting run to death in their front yard.
It's so hideous. It's
well, and
I am never at a loss for words, Bob. And I am at a loss for words on this one.
Well, you can blame this one on Betsy. She found the story first.
Okay.
But you know, between this one and a woman of dark skin in Connecticut doing 5 years hard time on a 12-year partially suspended sentence, in part because she tried to get her kindergartner into a decent kindergarten. You know, you're the Ivy Leaguer now. You square that one up, Cassie, because I'm done.
I wish I understood it.
This is a country that imprisons women for trying to do right by their children.
Now, that's happened in a few different places.
Yes, it has. It's happened in Ohio as well.
One of them. I heard about one of them.
Connecticut, Ohio, yeah. And here's the fun part. Assuming she does her 5 years hard time, when she gets out, she's got a $6,200 bill to pay back to the city of Norwalk. And if she doesn't pay that back, she'll go and do the other seven.
Well, I tell you, when it's time for her to get out, we should have a fun drive for her.
Well, I personally, I think we should have the fun drive now.
Okay.
And try to come up with the $6,200 and hand it to that freak of a judge and say, "Here, you sick old bastard. Here's Norwalk's stinking money. Do you think now you can quit?"
We should come up with double and then see if we can't get the children in the right school.
Yeah. And mommy out a hard time.
How come this country tolerates having inferior education just based on where you live? How much of what goes on is racial and how much is just anti-poor people?
I don't know if you can quantify that. But yeah, without fail, you can say that the most troubled school systems are the ones that are most populated by the poor of all races. I mean, for instance, 50 miles away from here in Charleston, West Virginia, they've got high schools that look like college campuses. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Here where I am, my children go to a high school that the local County Board of Education, which was superseded by the state of West Virginia, is trying for all it is worth to close so that all the children there can have 2 and 2.5 hour bus rides to school in the morning and home.
On purpose.
On purpose. And then they want to take all the little middle schoolers that are going to school 2 miles down the road here and put them in what was the high school and bring middle schoolers from across the river over to there.
Why? I mean, what's the point? Don't they have to pay for the gas and the bus drivers?
Yeah, but they say they can't afford to maintain community schools anymore because all of this is driven by property tax receipts, and there's just not enough people paying enough money to maintain a good school system anymore.
That means people need better jobs.
They need better jobs, and they need higher taxes.
Or they need to change the way that they fund the school.
Yeah.
When I was little, there was a thing in Texas about the Robin Hood laws. And there was a time when the district that I lived in had to pay money for the districts down in Del Valley.
In other words, in order to try to equalize services rendered.
Right, but then everybody up here complained so much.
Why should we pay for them?
Yeah.
Well, but in a state like West Virginia, consider, Cassie, there is enough coal coming out of this state that if it was appropriately taxed, we would have schools that looked like castles. And teachers, every last one of them with a master's degree or better. But you see, you don't want to educate children that well when, in fact, what you want to do is turn them into little coal miners as soon as they're old enough to quit school and little coal miner wives.
And little coal miners don't need to have much education.
Don't need to be doing that thinking. You know, that's why that, you may not have been listening that night, that's why that CEDAR program, that Coal in the Classroom is the shorthand for it, that goes into fourth grade classrooms and literally. Their latest program is called Mars 2030.
Uh-huh.
And it's a program where they tell little fourth graders that being a coal miner is just the same as being an astronaut, that a coal miner has to know just as much stuff as an astronaut does.
Wow.
And that's in Kentucky and West Virginia both.
What kind of... for 10 astronauts?
Well, I mean, there are, as I noted, commonalities. If an astronaut gets in trouble or a coal miner gets in trouble, they both will likely die because there's very little likelihood of anybody being able to rescue them.
Yeah,
and their bodies will never be recovered.
There are ways of fixing that for the coal miner.
Well, yeah, there's no...
Right? I mean, when the mine disaster happened, we learned about all of the safeguards that they have in Canada.
Yes, we did. And we also heard mine safety experts say that that there is not a single unpreventable mining accident that happens in the United States. But it's only unpreventable if you have functioning government that is willing to force the coal companies to make them unpreventable or to make them preventable. And right now, for instance, the coal industry is working around the clock to make sure that any new laws that go through don't actually make them take any substantive steps to see that another upper big branch doesn't happen. Instead, they have supplanted that with a worker drug testing plan. Cassie, I'm not kidding.
So wait, they're going to drug test the workers, but they're not going to do anything to actually... fix the mine?
That's essentially it, yes.
Were there drunk miners? I mean, were there...
Nope, there is no evidence whatsoever of impaired miners leading to any mining mishaps or disasters. None. Zero. Zilch. Nada. Niente.
It's just to the track. It's nothing more.
Yeah, it's to look like you're doing something and put all the onus on working people.
Did you hear that in Pennsylvania they have schools there have a fracosaurus?
Who's a horses?
It's the same thing as your coal mining thing. And remember those little lumps of coal that sang Christmas Carol?
Oh, yes.
So now in Pennsylvania... what they have is the fracosaurus in coloring books for children.
Oh, my God. Dr. John in New York will be having a fit just hearing this.
I'll see if I can get you a link.
Oh, please do.
I'll see if I can get you a link.
sometimes, you know, sometimes on the one hand you say, I don't know how much more I can stand. But the other way you go, oh, I do. I got to see this. I want to see the Fracosaurus. And, yeah, it goes right side by side with the little Christmas carol singing lumps of toxic death.
So are you still rooting? I can't believe I'm talking fourth. Are you still rooting for the same football team even though they're showing their loyalty by touching Cole from...
Yeah, I mean, it's still my alma mater. I mean, that's like saying you wouldn't root for the Princeton Tigers because George Schultz has a tiger tattoo on his butt. Not that the Princeton football team touches it or anything.
For the longest.
What?
I was sure you were kidding about that for the longest time.
Did you check it out? I mean, not George Schultz's actual butt, but.
No, I looked it up.
And he does, doesn't he?
I heard somebody else mention it, and then I found out what was what. But wow.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm always a Mountaineer. It's my alma mater. So my job is to advocate that they see the error of their ways. Of course, and I'm not just a football fan. I'm a basketball fan. Wow, did we get our butts handed to us by Notre Dame last night, 77-41 out in South Bend. Youch. We're putting ourselves in a real bind for getting into the dance. Because it's about time for me to... Yeah, it's about time for me to start fretting about that.
Got it. Real quick, I want to go back one more step.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Betsy, do you know that what her theory is about what they spend money on in education?
No, I don't know Betsy's, but I know that superintendents of schools and assistant superintendents and third assistant superintendents and attendance directors, they make a tasty lot of money.
Oh, yeah, but no, I mean, she thinks that they put, that they do know how to teach real thinking and that they do know how to do it and that they only teach thinking skills to kids who are tested in the gifted program.
Well, I think there's probably a lot of truth in that. I never recognized that it was happening to me when I was a child. But it just so happened, you know, upon looking back, it just so happened that, you know how it is, especially in grade school, you finish third grade and you say, gee, I hope I get Mrs. So-and-so because everybody says she's the easy fourth grade teacher.
And then you always got the hard one.
I never, ever, ever got the easy teacher. Little toe-headed, blue-eyed, pasty, doughy, you know, pink me. Always got the tough teacher.
Yeah, I did too.
And when you're little, you just you tend to say, "Wow, my luck stinks." But then you look back and you realize that you were actually being pre-selected.
Yeah. Well, we actually knew that the third grade teacher sat down with the fourth grade teachers in March or April or May and decided who was going to be where next year.
Oh, we were never clued in on any of that.
Oh, no, we knew that.
I practically went through the first 6 years of elementary school, Cassie, in a school of some size with the same kids in every class from year to year to year. But there was no such thing as a gifted program. I may have told the story about coming home in tears in first grade. Oh, wow. I sometimes feel so funny telling these things. It was first grade. I remember it like it was yesterday. And, you know, I'd been reading since I was about two.
Yeah.
Because I had teacher relatives who inundated my mother with school books to make, you know, And she just spent her time teaching me, you know, things that you teach, you know, in first, second, third grade.
I learned to read early, too.
And so in first grade, there was the teacher who dealt with the children that we would now refer to as developmentally delayed. But she was trained in other things as well. Before school let out that afternoon, my first grade teacher looked at me and said, "Tomorrow you're going to go and read for Mrs. what her name was." And she was in charge of a first grade class full of kids who had to be, among other things, you know, escorted to the restroom, you know, that sort of thing. Her first grade class was a madhouse.
Uh-huh.
And I went home. The minute that my teacher said this to me, my eyes began filling with tears. Because it wasn't 1 or 2 weeks into my first grade career.
Because we thought that
there was something wrong with me, too.
They labeled you the dumb one.
There was something wrong with me, and I cried all the way home. I walked all the way home, hardly able to see for the tears that were flowing out of my eyes. And I got home, and my mother, of course, asked what was wrong, and I explained it to her. And she said, "Well, you know, we'll just pray about it. And we'll see how it works out in the morning."
Did she call the school?
No.
Well, my mama would have been on the phone so fast.
And the next day I went to school, and they brought me into that first grade class, and the teacher took me off in the corner with her and started handing me books. And I didn't know what kind of books they were. But first it was the first grade See Dick, See Dick Run, See Jane, you know. And then it was the second grade book, and then it was the third grade book. These things I only find out later. Then it was the fourth grade book, because they were astonished. And they kind of gave up when they got to the seventh grade book.
And you were in first grade?
Yeah.
So what did they do with you?
Stuck me back in first grade. You know, if I'd been a little bit better, they might have booted me up to third.
I had something like that in third grade. When my third grade teacher figured out that part of the reason I was causing trouble all the time was that I really could read and do math and stuff better than most other kids, and that I was just bored.
Yeah, by fourth grade... when my fourth grade teacher had about enough and badly needed a cigarette, she would declare reading time, call me to the front of the room, and whatever book she had been reading to us, because we got read to, she would open the book to where the bookmark was and say, "Start reading." And they were generally good stories, and I was kind of bringing them to life, and she'd go off and have a cigarette. And come back 30 minutes later, you know. And I was clueless. It's precious looking back on it.
It is.
But golly, that day in first grade, I walked into that classroom, and I was afraid I'd never walk out. I mean, you know how little minds work.
Yeah.
And it's not to be bigoted or prejudiced or judgmental or anything, but there was no learning going on in there.
Well, maybe different learning.
Yeah, okay. Different learning. Different needs. But
yeah, no, my mom taught me how to read real young because my brother had so much trouble learning. And she, you know, didn't want to deal with that twice.
Isn't it amazing to look back?
Yeah.
Well, Cassie, it's awfully good to hear from you, dear.
It's good talking to you. And I'm glad we switched to a topic. That...
Well, somehow or another, you have to happy your way out of it because we can't end shows like that. We just can't.
No. No. Oh, it is near the end, isn't it?
Yeah.
I just looked at the clock. It's like...
Yeah, three and a half minutes. Just time enough for me to do the credits.
Okay.
Call back soon.
Okay.
All right. We love you.
Love you, too. Bye-bye.
Bye. Cassie at college, taking time out of a busy study schedule just to check in. And it is time to get out of here. Thank you very kindly for joining us this evening for this Thorn in the Side Thursday. Sorry about the painfully evil, weird, hateful stuff. Gosh, maybe we'll have something funny to talk about tomorrow. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Oh, by the way, don't forget to go to Insight Out News, Insight, I-N-S-I-G-H-T, Out, O-U-T, News, InsightOutNews.org. Give them some page counts. Our thanks go out to our all-volunteer staff, our chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky, our news ninjas Susan and Gene, both of whom would be utterly lost, to our blogger Texas Betsy, who put us onto the Alabama story this evening. Thanks to Reverbo, our op-ed columnist. Thanks to my head writer, David in Tennessee, and more than a darn fine cook. A most excellent one. Thanks to John Fox in Australia, where there's some government shakeup going on. John, if you're listening, you might check in and let us know exactly what's going on down there. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, literally saving progressive liberal radio all on his own on the internet since 2002. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Go there and learn about the ongoing heroic work of Coal River Mountain Watch. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid.